Today's date is the 14th of May 2012. My name is Therese Sweeney. This is the Pioneers of the Fringe project. I'm here with five former residents from the housing estate formerly known as Green Valley, and I'll get them to introduce themselves. We're at Bateau Bay at my mother's house.
What's your full name?
My full name is Margaret Mary Carr.
And your date of birth and place of birth?
Well, my date of birth is the 31st of the 12th, 29, and my place of birth, even though we lived in the country, my mother came down to Sydney to have me, it was Rushcutters Bay.
And where was that, a hospital or a...?
No, they just had what you'd call nursing homes, or maternity homes, I think they call them. Mm. People didn't go very often to, or I don't know whether the big hospitals had maternity sections, but... Anyhow, that's where I was born.
And just briefly, you said you grew up in the country. Where did you grow up?
Oh, a place called Mullingatree. It's about 31 miles from Ningen.
And was it a farm?
Yes, it was. Sheep mainly, yes.
How big was that property?
Oh, quite a few acres. So 400 or 500, would that be right? But we stayed there until... my father's death when I was about 12, and times were, it was early 40s, times were very bad as far as the drought was concerned then. It was a dreadful time, and he'd been sick for 3 years with a stroke. In those days you had a stroke and you don't have the rehabilitation that you have now. You have a stroke and they more or less say, well, you have a couple more and it'll be the end of you. You're on medication of some description, but nothing like it is now. So once you had a stroke, you didn't improve at all. You just existed, really. So we were all young.
How many of you?
There were only three of us. It was my father's second marriage. He was a widower when my mother met him. And I have nieces and nephews, half nieces and nephews, who are older than we are. Which it's a rather funny family, because the time my mother married him, my father, he was about 48 and she was 38, his children were all being married, because he married quite young. And so it's a very a strange relationship, but that's how they are, you know. And we've more or less kept in touch to a certain extent with them, but they're all dead now.
So what was your father's full name?
William John Burrell.
And your mother's full name?
Ethel Eliza Sloan.
Okay, so we might just move, if that's okay with you. And what's your full name?
My full name is Ruth Hudgens.
And your former name?
My former name is Russell.
And your date of birth and place of birth?
9th of August 1932. And I was born at Lake Jellicoe, which is a small, lovely town about the middle of the state of New South Wales.
So what were your parents doing there?
Existing. Pretty poor. And I was born, I suppose it was Depression times, wasn't it? 32. My father used to catch rabbits to keep a family of six children.
That's a lot of rabbits he would have had to have caught.
Well, I don't know. I suppose the cost of living was so cheap then, I guess. We didn't exist entirely. Mum was a wonderful cook. And he eventually went out working very hard, taking in washing and things like that.
What was your home like there?
Always rented homes until quite late in life. I bought a home, yeah.
And how many brothers and sisters?
Four brothers and one sister.
And where were you?
I was the second one.
And your father's full name?
Alexander Russell.
And your mother's name?
Ivy May O'Neill. Irish.
And what's your date of birth and name and place of birth?
The 31st of October 1936, and I was born in Dubbo, in a hospital.
And your name?
Bernadette Claire Sweeney.
And where did you grow up?
Well, I've lived in Dubbo for a short period of time. Then we moved to Orange, where John was born. Not there too long, my mother couldn't handle the cold. And we came to Sydney to live with one of her sisters for a while at Hurstville. Then we rented for a little while at Bexley. And in 1941, we moved to Gardiners Road, Rosebery. And we rented that till my parents bought it in 1958.
And what's your father's and mother's full names?
My father was Bernard Aloysius Toohey, and my mother was Isma Claire O'Brien.
And what did they both do for a living?
That's where Mum and Dad actually met each other at Parlings, where Mum did secretarial work. I'm not quite sure what Dad probably did clerical work. But after that, he left and started selling insurance for different insurance companies.
And your mother had her own business?
That was later on, yes, she did, yeah.
Okay, we'll just move. So, you want to tell us your full name?
Norma Amy Walker. It was Bedford. I was born at Leichhardt. I was born at Crown Street Hospital, but I lived in Leichhardt. Lived there for about 25 years. And my father worked at Cockatoo Island. And my mother was worked in a milliner's. She was a milliner. So,
do you know where that was?
No, it was somewhere in the city, but she didn't. I don't know exactly where.
And what were their full names?
My mother is Isabel Cecilia O'Dowd, and my father was Walter William Bedford. Now, my father was the eldest of 19. Well, the grandmother had 19, but not all survived, only 10 survived. And my mother was one of 10 too. Got about 59 cousins. And yes, all over the...
As you would.
Yes.
And your... Oh, okay. So, and your brothers and sisters?
I have one brother and one sister.
And your full name?
Morris Joseph Carr, born on the 22nd of March, 1931. One of eight children, I'm the seventh. Born at Forest Lodge. We were living at, parents were living at Glebe at the time. In those days, they had maternity hospitals. This one was run by a matron McMahon, and that's where I was born. Parents, my father, when the depression was on, at the beginning of the depression, he had a business of his own. It was like a bottle-o, only this was for jute bags and different type of bags, chaff, sugar bags and everything. They would recycle them. And when the depression came, that was the finish of his business. So, fortunately, he was able to get a job as a public servant, and that's where he stayed all his life. He wouldn't take any risks after that.
Did you mention his name?
James Gilbert Carr, he was. My mum was Elizabeth May.
So when did... We've got a husband and wife here today. Can we talk about how you met and where you met without too much gory detail?
In our day, there was the what we called the CYO, which was a Catholic Youth Organisation. Mm-hmm. And Marg and I met at Croydon Catholic Youth.
I didn't belong to Croydon Parish, but I was in Ashfield, but a friend of mine said, come over to Croydon. And that's where we met. And people say, do you remember meeting him? And I say, no, I don't, because he was just there. You know? But do you remember meeting me?
No, we were just there.
Yeah.
As members of the CYO. And
so what did you do there?
For entertainment.
Yes.
The reason I belonged to the CYO was I was a footballer and they had a football competition, and so I was interested in that. Yeah.
We had dances every second Tuesday night in the Melbourne Hall. They were great. And you'd go on picnics, or not practically every Sunday, you know, to one of the beaches.
Mm.
And is that what you all did?
Yes.
Can you relate to that? So do you want to talk a bit about... Yeah. We'll just go to a general, like the CYO was a...
It was a great way for people meeting each other, which, you know, I don't know how they manage nowadays, but in those days it was good. People of your own interests.
A lot of marriages came out of those, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I met your father, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Minogue was a friend of my brother's, and he introduced... They're in national service together. He introduced me to Dad.
What about you?
Well, I used to go to the CYO, but my husband wasn't a Catholic, so I met him at... I was bridesmaid for a friend, and I met him at her wedding.
Oh.
And... Yeah, I was bridesmaid 3 times. I didn't think I was going to get married.
3 times.
Yeah, that's that was the saying. 3 times a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Yeah.
And what's your husband's name?
Alan Keith Walker.
And what did you think when you met Alan at the wedding?
Oh, I don't know.
How old were you?
20. I was 20.
Yeah, me too.
What about you, Ruth? How did you meet Frank?
He came there with his family. His father was a bank manager in he was Commercial Banking Company of Australia at the time, or something, and what it is now.
Mm.
Yeah, so couldn't stand him.
That was to the country town?
Yeah.
So you knew each other from what age?
Not really. I don't know, he blew in, he was one of the drunks of the town, so I kept clear.
And what happened?
He liked for a Murray's trip.
And what happened?
Oh, I just kept running away as fast as I could. Yeah, no, I had lots of lovely boyfriends there, but I always made sure that they were the passing parade. I didn't want to get tied up with someone, a farmer or anything, because there's no way I was going to stay there. Bank Johnnies and school teachers were great because they were passing parade, they just came in and moved on, and it was wonderful. Mm. Yeah, but somehow...
But you got stuck with him.
Oh, yeah, but Frank went to Sydney about 54, and we didn't get married to 59, so it was nice when I came to Sydney, I could bring him up and we'd go to the races and nightclubs and lovely time.
So when you talk about the Catholic Youth Organisation, how was that? How did they recruit you? Like, how did it become part of your schooling? You moved into the CYO. How was that part of the culture?
Well, I suppose so. Where I was at school at Randwick, the senior girls used to always, when we left school, they'd always encourage us to come along to the Sunday night dances at Randwick. Yes. At Marsland College, they had a hall. And it was sort of the way they looked after the younger ones. It was a sort of, I felt that was how I went.
Being city life, what else would you have?
That's otherwise? Right.
Well, we were at boarding school till I was nearly 18, and we were like as green as grass when we came home. But I didn't know much about the CYO at all. I know our parish had one, every parish had one. But I sort of wasn't particularly interested until this girl said, come over to the Croydon CYO, and that's how I got involved with the CYO.
So you were at boarding school?
Yes.
Where did you board?
At Goulburn, St Joseph's, North Goulburn. That was in the 40s, and I left in the end of 1947. But I suppose it was a good life. I rather liked it, but really, now, the kids of today, if they went to our boarding school, it was very draconian, went to our boarding school, they'd be shocked, because I think people at boarding school live quite, quite privileged lives now, but they were, we couldn't do this and we couldn't do that, and it was very restricted. But anyhow, we survived.
The nuns were tough, weren't they?
Oh, yes, they were, really, I suppose. Now it's a whole different ball game, mm-hmm. really, because we went back for a reunion. We've been back for a reunion on a couple of occasions, and we look at their sitting room when they've got these recliner chairs in there and, everything. And this seems dreadful now. We're only allowed to have a shower twice a week. You had to sort of have dish baths or something. Mm. And looking back on that now, that seems dreadful.
Mm.
Oh, you'd get killed if you were caught having a shower on any other day than your day.
That's interesting. And some of you are nodding your head. Like, Norma, what's...
We only used to have a bath once a week. The rest of the time you'd get a dish of water and go in the bathroom and stand on a towel and wash yourself from head to toe.
Yeah.
And on the Sunday you'd have your... that was up until I was about 15, I think.
Yes. Actually, at boarding school, they had what they call these foot baths, and you were supposed to wash your feet every day. Other than having a they weren't showers, they were baths.
And you'd have to have your wash every day, but...
And why was that? Because of... Why was that in your circumstances?
Well, we had to boil up the copper that you'd wash with, and bail the water over to the bath. We didn't have a bath heater or hot water service or anything. And that was jumping.
When we were in England, that's what we had to do, boil the copper.
And that was at Leichhardt. That was, Leichhardt's a suburb so close to Sydney,
And what about Glebe, Maury?
Yeah, I don't remember Glebe, but my father had a breathing complaint. They called it asthma, but I don't know whether it was or not. He went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you want to move out to the country, away from the city because of the city air. So he moved to Croydon. In those days, that was the country, 7 miles from Sydney. And all I can remember is growing up in I was 21 months old when we moved, and that's where I spent all my life, at Croydon, until I got married.
And how was the transport in the city at Leichhardt and Croydon?
Trams.
How would you get around?
Trams and a bus. We had a bus along Parramatta Road, but if we wanted the tram, we'd go walk to Five Dock and get the tram to the city.
Remember your mother, you told me your mother used to say, because the men in that age went out and bought the homes without consulting the women. she's in dreadful state, you're taking me right out to the country to live. And even when we first went to Liverpool, it was like the country, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
It was out in the country,
That was 1963 we went
there. Yeah, you went 63.
Mm. So thinking about, what year were you both married?
1953. We were 10 years in rented premises, and really, now you want to talk about how we came by the Housing Commission later, but...
No, talk about it now.
I wasn't keen about the idea of Housing Commission, because I used to hear how you waited years and years, and I don't know whether I thought a house was going to drop in our laps or something, but I thought, what's the use putting on? And then the girl next door she was moving, she and her husband and a couple of children. And I said, where are you going? She said, out to Lilac Park, we've got a housing commission home. I said, yes. She said, we're able to buy it. It's the first I'd ever heard of buying housing commission. Mm. This was 1959. And I said, tell me more about it. So she told me all about it. She said, you only have to have 100 altogether, about £120, And, she said, get your name there, and it's well worthwhile, and you don't have years and years. You might have 2 or 3 or 4 years, but you don't have 10 years or anything like that. So anyhow, we had them come out, didn't we? They came out and interviewed you, if I remember rightly. And we got on the list, And we waited 4 years, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then, first of all, we were given a house at Lighter Park, it was, yes. And we went up, the sewerage wasn't on there, and we went up and had a look at it. And they give you three choices, apparently, but I think after third choice, if you turn that down, that's it. And anyhow, they said, oh, you may not have to wait much longer for another choice. And anyhow, Green Valley came up. Never heard of Green Valley. Mm-hmm. And we'd heard how you had pursued. And I thought, oh, we thought that sounds good. So we went out and looked at it. And it was the best day, best thing I've ever done, you know. But,
so what was good? Where were you? What suburb?
Sadler. But we were sort of quite happy and contented from the word go, weren't we?
Yeah. About regarding the sewerage, the reason we were not keen on going to Laylaw Park where there's no sewerage was there's a lot of hepatitis about at the time. And we decided we didn't want to take the risk of going to an unsewered area. So we didn't have much longer to wait until we got to the
offer. Did you have your savings? So you'd saved your deposit?
Oh, look, it seems funny to say now, but finding £120 in those days, I'd just come home from, when we were allotted, after we allotted the house, I'd just come home from hospital with Anne, and she was my fifth charge. I was lucky to get out of hospital, little have £120. Oh, I thought, what are we going to do? I thought we must be the poorest people in Australia. And, you know, when we came up here and we started talking to other people like the Jarretts and different people, they were all much in the same boat, you know. The house was sprung on them and, oh, to find the money. Because really, you need every cent that you were earning just to keep the family going. You know? And none of the wives worked in those days. And anyhow, with the help of my mother, we got the £120. But I was, even if I had to beg, borrow, or steal, I was determined we weren't going to lose that opportunity. Because when all said and done, a lot of people turn up their nose at the housing commission, but if we hadn't had that, we would have had no prospect of home. And no prospect of, because it went in value so much, we paid £4,000 for our place. And by the time we sold it, it was £200,000, you know. Well, that gave us the opportunity to move up here when we retired, so it was a good thing.
What, can you describe your house when you arrived?
Oh, yes, it was very, bare essential, wasn't it?
Primitive.
Was it brick or fibre?
No, it was brick.
Our house was brick. Yours was brick, the same as Ruth's. And you had to get your carpets down and you had to get your curtains and blinds. There was a blind man who sold blinds, I should say, coming around. They were keen to hop onto any business they could. And next thing we had the place equipped with blinds, or not curtains, I think I've got the curtains out of the wallet. But paying him off, of course, he used to come around every month or so and collect the money. Then we had Walton's saved us. We had the floor coverings for Walton's. And what furniture? Well, just like a bedroom suite and a lounge room suite. They weren't first class furniture, but they did us for a few years anyhow. But I think we had our bedroom suite and what else did we have? On the kids' beds and everything.
Yeah.
There were double bunks and everything.
And we might revisit the furniture after in a minute, and I'll just get Ruth to talk about maybe what year you got married to Frank and your journey to Green Valley as well, just the initial arrival.
Mm. You don't hear about that, shall we? That's my opinion of it.
Yes, please. Yes.
No, we were married in 59 and we went into a rented unit at Cremoyne, and it was right on the waterfront at St George's Crescent. Frank found it very convenient because he worked with Caltex. He caught a bus. We used to go to Mass before we even went to work. It was lovely. It was lovely and handy, and I used to get invaded by visitors because it was such a convenient place to be. And we couldn't live there because we paid 8 guineas a week. Plus telephone. And what else? What other charge? Oh, and electricity. Yeah, because it was very expensive to live there, and I didn't work, unfortunately. I should have.
It's hard when you've got children, though, isn't it?
Oh, well,
it was in those days.
When I eventually got a job at, what year? 83, was it? Something like that. Frank nearly divorced me. No, he didn't approve of working mothers. What else?
Okay, so we're talking about your move to Green Valley. About your marriage date. Now you're near the water and you're about to slum it out west.
Yeah, we certainly did.
So what happened about applying for the housing?
I don't know how we did that. Out of sheer desperation, I think Frank said we had £4, it would have been, when we moved in 65. So it was desperation, yeah. Because we had two children.
So you rented out there?
No, we bought. And I thought it was £100, Margaret.
Or did I say 200?
No, you said 120.
Well, stamp duty.
Stamp duty came into it. I think it was £50 deposit and £70 stamp duty. Oh, that's what I understand.
Yes, I know we had about 120 to pay.
I can't remember.
So you can't recall applying for a house?
Yeah, we did somehow. I know my brother-in-law had previously worked in Housing Commission, and he mentioned never heard of it. But when we applied, I don't know how long we waited. I can't tell you that.
And what suburb, what was your address, and what did you think when you
were very fortunate, actually. I thought we were blessed where we got ours, because, now, first of all, I've forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
They offered us one at in Heckenberg. And we went out in November, and it was glorious. There was dust everywhere, it was a stinky hot day, and this place in Guthaca Crescent was a weatherboard one. But there was building going on everywhere, and it was the worst day. So there was no way I was going to accept it. So we went in to see them, and I refused it. And he said very nicely to me, "Well, I've got plenty of people who'd like it, so you can go to the bottom of the list."
Oh, did he?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Oh. And I think I went home and cried. I thought, what are we going to do? And Brian said, my brother-in-law, "What you have to do is write a letter to them and tell them that you'll reconsider." So I did that. And very shortly after that, we were off at Cartwright Avenue. And I think it was Miller. Mm. I called it Busby and I called it Miller. So we're on the verge. But it was a superb, as it turned out, it was a superb position because the bus was right. We weren't right on the main road because we're in a little cul-de-sac.
Yes.
And we had, at the back of us, we had another walk through. We weren't backing onto any homes, and we had two wonderful neighbours. There were only six homes in that little cul-de-sac.
It was a reserve at the back. It was really quite picturesque,
yes,
wasn't it?
It was, yes. And it was very convenient. And it was 5 minutes walk to the church and the school. And the shops were there too. We were fortunate. We had shops there when we moved in 65.
We didn't have any shops.
No, we didn't.
So what about you, Bernadette?
When we were first married, Michael and I paid for a room in a house with an old lady up at Kingsford. And, you know, we had to share the kitchen and share the... No, we had our own bathroom, I think. That's right. But we had our own bedroom, but we shared facilities. And then I was working, and I was pregnant with Gregory only a few weeks after we were married. And when my mother realised that, she said... I actually left work on my birthday, the 31st of October in that year, in 59. And my mother said, "Well, look, I need to go to work. How about you come home and you can look..." Because I had members, younger siblings who hadn't started school. And she said, "If you come home with Michael, you can live here and I can go to work and you can look after the kids that are home." So we did that. And we lived with Mum and Dad till the March of 1964. And as you know, we posted our application the day we got married. We had big hopes of getting one at Maroubra, because that was one of the areas, but we didn't. And I had been out to Liverpool once with my father, so I had a rough idea where it was.
And when we went, my brother Philip would have taken us, and when we looked at the house, the thing that got me was it was all electric because I was petrified of gas, absolutely terrified. And that just won me over straight away. So my sister Margaret lent me the £50 for the deposit. I borrowed from the bank, which they didn't want to lend it to me, but the fellow said he felt sorry for me because I had four children. And and that covered the moving, and I just had all the floors Estepold. That was the cheapest thing for me to do. And I think it was only about what we call now, it was probably a shilling in those days, a yard, for plastic material that was, not material, just plastic with patterns on it. And I made like curtains out of that around all the windows, and it was like served as blinds and curtains. Mm-hmm. So it was quite cheap. I did that to start with. But that's virtually... Yeah, we were quite happy with going there. We didn't know any... Well, yeah, we didn't meet any people. We got there, that's right. So it was quite a new thing for us to do. But I'd say for Michael, it was the first time he had his family on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And with his lifestyle, having grown up in orphanages, I think that was special to him, to all of a sudden have this family in his own home.
Yes.
It was very special for him.
What did you think when you saw the house?
I loved it. Because we didn't have big ideas about big houses or anything. And it was only a little fibro three-bedroom house. And I was tickled. Yeah, that was wonderful to me. Yeah.
Okay, Norma. So you got married.
Yeah, and we were living in a little one-bedroom and a kitchenette flat at Leichhardt. And
what year was that?
58. And we applied... Straight away after we got married, we applied for a housing commission. We thought at the time we'd just rent one, you know, but when the opportunity came around, we thought, oh no, we'll take on buying it. So we were first offered a house at Heckenberg, and we went there one day to have a look at it, and the backyard was such a slope.
Yes.
And I had three children, and I thought, oh, I can't imagine children. But, and it was only a two-bedroom, and I had three, so we knocked it back and asked if we could get a three-bedroom house. And I think it was about 14 months later, we got offered the one at Miller. And we went out and saw that and thought how wonderful it was, and, yes, we moved in out there.
What street was that in, and what type of house?
It was a fibro house in Kenilworth Street, 22 Kenilworth Street.
Can I ask what colour your houses were?
It was a greeny colour, like a real light pale green. And then the dark green guttering and that. But the day we went out there to look at it, the people on their right-hand side came to visit theirs also. It was a four-bedroom house. And the chap got out and was having a look at his house, and then he went back to the car and he got a jemmy, and he jemmied open the window and climbed through so they could go in. And Alan says, oh, they're our neighbours. But we were that desperate to get a place, we took it anyway. And a week after we moved in, our other neighbours on the other side moved in, Bess and Alf Wade, and the nicest neighbours you could have ever had in your life. Wonderful people.
And they became part of the parish.
Like, yes, yes.
How did the other neighbours work out?
Oh, they had trials and tribulations and everything, you know, always in getting, borrowing a cup of sugar. And one time one of the girls came in, she was going for a job interview, and she asked me if she could have a squeeze of toothpaste because she wanted to clean her teeth before she went to the job interview. But yeah, there was a police raid there too one time. And but eventually they moved out and other people moved in.
So they were renters next door?
Yeah, they were renters, yeah, on that side, yeah.
There's quite a bit of renting in Miller.
Yes, yes.
So we might talk a bit generally now, and I might just... The door-to-door salesman, like Walton's, so yes, maybe some recollecting, like how you... Walton's, They must have furnished Green Valley.
They must have, yes. We were a great asset to them.
Yes.
But really, the fact that they came to the door every fortnight, you made sure you had that money there. With the whole lot of children, would have been terrible. And no car, trying to scramble into Liverpool every fortnight.
So how did you choose your furniture? Like, from Walton's, was it, did you go into the shop or did they have a book or how was that done, then the exchange?
It had to be the shop, I'm sure.
I think we went to the shop at Liverpool. Yes. We didn't go out Liverpool, at
Sydney, no.
Well, we knew what furniture we were getting and, you know, we got ourselves into a great deal of debt, I suppose, because we had the house high interest rates and paid it off by Walton's.
High interest rates. Frank wouldn't have anything to do with them.
But the carpet and everything were down a couple of days after. Oh, the carpet was down on the roof, which was a bad mistake. It was at Westminster, which we thought was very serviceable. But as I said, the yards weren't. They had to be all rotary hoed and the lawn set in. Kids now buy a house, and it's landscaped and everything. Oh, a lot of them are. And that's how they buy them, and it'd be a great help. But finally, then we had a very wet winter that year. And the mud all coming in on this blessed Westminster carpet. It was useless in a couple of years.
So you talk about the wet winter and you're all nodding your head. So you all remember that.
Yes.
And what year was that?
65 was mine and it absolutely turned.
I think it was the year after we moved in.
63 hours, was it? Mm. See, we don't have wet winters like we used to have, but you'd more or less go, the kids would go out in the backyard after it'd been roped and hoed, and they'd come up.
Yeah, covered in mud.
Up to the shins in
So what
mud.
Were they rotary hoeing?
I didn't.
It was mud like clay. Clay.
To break it up.
Patrick was a... he was a carter and he was all sorts of things, Fitzpatrick. And he just took all the... it was a dairy farm. And he just took all the topsoil and left the clay underneath. Yeah. And we were left with clay to deal with. And we had to keep on getting topsoil delivered and, you know, to try and make something of the garden and the backyard.
He was a contractor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And what did he do?
Oh, well, he just bought up all the land and the Holy Housing Commission bought from them. Is that how it went?
I'm not sure, but he had access to the land, and whether it was anyone might come along with a truck and fill their truck up with topsoil, I don't know whether it was that type of thing or whether he had a contract.
Because that's really important information.
Clay
was dreadful.
But he had something to do with the torch at
Bankstown
at that time.
So what's that?
The Torch at Bankstown is a local newspaper.
Yeah.
Like ours was the Leader, wasn't it?
Kenny worked at the Torch.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone had clay?
Yes.
You couldn't avoid the clay.
How did that come about? Because very good friends of ours, Mary, I think her name was Miller. I can't even think of a married name anyway. But they played golf with us and they lived at, they had a unit at somewhere in the city area. But she used to pick me up and we'd play golf out at, what was it?
Tree Valley.
Norella?
Camden Valley. She's told me they owned all up around Miller High School there, was their property. They had farm. And that's when she was growing up.
Was it the dairy farm?
It was the dairy farm. And all that area. And I know there's a lot of, it was called Miller. I guess it was called after her family.
The dairy was still there when we moved in.
We used to walk
around with the billy can and get milk there. Mm. It was only threepence a big billy can full of milk, which was absolutely wonderful.
So can you talk about that? So every day would you do that?
Yes, probably, because, you know,
you'd only be, a few minutes walk from there?
Because that was the old side of Banks Road, the dairy.
Yeah, that's right. There were cows there. There must go along, there were cows there.
Yeah. just wandering.
Those lanes they had, those side lanes were very
difficult.
But then they closed them all up towards the end because they were getting a lot of
vandalism.
Vandals or just camping there or having parties in the lane. And a lot of them were closed up and we had to walk a bit further.
So did you all have Waltons? Just getting back to Waltons, I just want to...
Yes.
Those of you that did you?
Yeah, later on. I don't think we could afford to do anything when we first went. It was quite a few years later before we got caught up with Waltons.
And you did?
Yes. When we first moved in, we only had a mattress on the floor. And we didn't have a bedroom suite, you know. The children had, like, a beds and... cot and that, but and we Estepole too, and about 3 months later we got the bed and lino for the kitchen, because the kitchen was very hard to keep clean, kitchen floor, so we put some lino down out there. But with all the mud, I'd got onto some of those little plastic shoes for the kiddies, and you could just hose them off.
Yes,
you wouldn't have, you know. And they'd wear them outside and then bring them in and hose them off.
Are they gum boots?
No, just a little plastic sandal-y shoe.
Sandal. But the mud used to get caught up all in the little bruises at the back, but you could hose them off.
So we found that quite a boon when they were little.
But really, I suppose looking back, and the kids of today would be horrified. But fortunately, we had the bedroom suite because the people that we were renting the place from very kindly said, well, you can take, well, they took their dining room suite, but you can take any furniture you like, you know. So the bedroom suite and the wardrobe and the dressing table. And
you had that to move in with.
Yes, all that. But, you know, hoity-toity me when we thought, oh, dear, I'd like everything new. But you soon learned that you're very appreciative of all of it.
So were your husbands working in the city?
No, you were.
Frank was.
Michael was too.
Where were you working at the time?
I was working at Repap.
Oh, Repap.
In the city.
But you weren't there for long when you got to Penrith, the Penrith Hospital. So,
so how was that? Like, the men had to go and work and... Did you have a car?
No.
So what was your daily routine? Just
get the bus from down the corner into Liverpool Station and then the train to Town Hall, and I'd walk from Town Hall to Grace Building.
Alan worked for the Sydney County Council, and we had a car when we moved out there, and he used to leave at 6:30 to drive in because he lived and worked at Pyrmont, in the depot there at Pyrmont. And then he got a transfer out to Bankstown, which made it a lot easier.
So eventually the men were probably trying to organise work closer to home because there was no work in the area.
No, there wasn't really.
No.
When you got to Penrith, they thought, well, you know, when he got the position at Penrith, they thought, well, we'll have to get a car to go to Penrith, but public transport from Liverpool was only about half an hour in the car. So we got Peter Fonty worked at a... remember Peter Fonty? He worked at a used car place. So we got a car from him. It was a bit of a bomb. It was always breaking down. But anyhow, that got him to Penrith. But there's no other way to get to Penrith except by car.
So how did you view the transport?
Originally, we used to walk down to near where Margaret and Maurie lived to catch the bus.
Did you?
Used to come. That's where I first went there. That's where the bus.
Yes.
We couldn't get a bus up our way. It was near your place.
We were only three doors down from the bus.
Yeah, it was where. That's where we used to walk down there to catch it.
Yes. And you had lanes you could walk through.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the Oliveri's bus.
Yeah.
So we had the other one.
Yeah, we got the other bus. Yes, at Miller, and we had to go through the lane and onto Miller Road to catch the bus. But we used to have to go in there into Liverpool to get food.
That's right.
There used to be a little combi van that'd come around with groceries in it, and it'd come around and you could buy things if you.
We had one come around with fruit and vegetables.
The fruit and vegetable man had come around and the baker had come around.
And the baker, and the milkman, of course.
Oh, we'd get our milk at the dairy.
What other sort of sale? Because I remember the door-to-door salesman. Like, I know Mum bought a set of encyclopedias 1 year.
Yes.
So what sort of Who would be knocking on your doors?
The man coming around selling the Bibles.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
I've got one of those like big Bibles.
Actually, you've got a lot of hawkers in those.
Let's talk about the hawkers then. Yes. So just get a sense of what it was like.
I used to dread seeing them at the door, you know. Some were very persistent.
Yes.
But
hard to say no to.
I'd say no. Walton's and the Bible were the only two things that was paying off. So
how did you start finding out about the church? So maybe you all have your own story then. You're all Catholics, I'm assuming. How did the networking start with, and when did the first mass, do you remember all of that?
This
is October 1963.
Yeah, Feast of St. Therese.
Father Muldoon was here when
we were there a couple of months before, but the priest from Liverpool used to come out and have mass in the hall.
That's right.
And then Father Muldoon came. We had a great big party for
Father Muldoon was appointed as the parish priest.
Where was that, Murray?
That was October 3rd. He said his first Mass.
And that's why he said, we'll call the church St. Therese.
It was the feast of St. Therese.
When it's built. On account of the parish starting on the 3rd of October.
So what do you... Let's talk about Father Muldoon and just sort of... So the first Mass was held. Who was at the first Mass?
Everyone. Barbara Kane and her husband and all these kids, remember?
Yeah, it would have been the Sadler people because Busby and Miller hadn't started. It would have been Sadler and...
Yes.
Barbara was Sadler, wasn't she?
Yeah.
You know, there was a fair crowd there, wasn't there?
Oh, yes.
Mm. Their names? Can you remember some names?
The Jarretts.
The Jarretts would have been.
You weren't. Oh, no, not no, the first day. We weren't involved.
No. The Jarretts and Norma, and were you Carlson. Here?
No. So it was only you and Murray.
Yeah.
Pauline Carlson and the Pines. Mm. Do you remember Kath Pine?
Jeff Pine? Vaguely. Yeah. Vaguely. Yeah.
This was 1963.
Yeah, so
we weren't there.
We were in 64.
And what were you feeling that day? Were you...
A month in 64. Mother's Day.
Well,
you were just after me.
Hang on.
Well, we were very happy to have our own priest come up to date. Like, we arrived in, what month, July, wasn't
July it? July 63.
July, and we went to October, and each Sunday you'd go to Mass and you wouldn't know what priest was going to come out from Liverpool. But then we felt privileged when Father Muldoon was... appointed as the parish priest. He was going to be a regular and he was going to live in the parish, which he did. In the house next door was allocated to him as a presbytery.
So how was the building built? Was the hall there?
The hall was already there when we got there. It was already, and it was built on behalf of Lewisham Parish, who paid for the building.
We had a lot of help, really, didn't we?
Yes.
And then the nuns came and built their own convent.
Yes.
So,
We'll just go to Norma. You're going to say something, aren't you?
We were there about a week and Father Muldoon knocked on the door.
Yes.
And just said that he was coming round visiting, and I said we were Catholic, and he gave us the information then to go to the church and everything like that. So that's how we found out about it. Of course, Bessie, they moved in about a fortnight after us, I think.
A biscuit or something if your stomach's wrong.
Yeah, so...
So what were your first impressions of... What did you think of that when you met him?
I thought he was very nice. Yeah, he was. Yeah,
time, I like it.
He was a very sort of shy priest, wasn't he?
Yes,
you know,
he was very reserved.
Yes,
I think
if
he went around knocking, he even knocked on every door.
So that's how the church started.
Yes. And he had called a meeting, I think, if I remember right, to get things started, and everyone was very. Obliging, weren't they?
Yes.
I don't think he had a car. I think he walked around, he came up, walked up to Miller there and walked around all the place.
He didn't get a car eventually.
Oh, yes, he had a car.
But
Let's talk about the start of the conversation of a school. How did that?
Oh, well, our children, three of them were eligible, or we were lucky to get them in, really, were able to go to Liverpool, the Catholic schools in Liverpool. But then Maureen was the next to come along, and she went to Mount Pritchard for a couple of years, like Greg did too. And then St. Therese opened up in 1968, I think it was.
67.
67, was it? Sorry, 67. And she was in second class, were they?
Mm.
Yeah. So they were like the senior class. First of all, they were going to start higher up, and then they took it down to second class, wasn't it? So they only kindergarten, first class, and yes, second class, and they added a year as they went on. That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah, so they were like the senior class. They only took them after consideration, didn't they? They weren't going to have second class, but anyhow, they did, and the school grew from that.
So, do you remember the conversations of the school? Like, it was a fundraising event to build the school. How was the school built?
I can remember there was quite a bit of controversy over whether we have a school, a church, what should come first, a school, a church, or a parish centre. And there was great talk about a parish centre.
So let's talk about what sort of input you all had into fundraising.
Yes, I think it was great that there was so much fundraising. No one had any money, and it didn't cost you any money to engage in these fundraising things. As you say, there was Silver Circle.
Prior to that, we used to have those horrible little things, didn't we?
Yes, what were that?
Pauline.
That number.
Pauline used to
what
run.
What was that numbers thing, our colours thing we had? What was that all about?
There was always something going on. We had fates and things.
We had fates every year.
Yeah,
we
the
had
fates
were
a good money raiser.
We worked too hard for those, didn't we? And Pauline.
Carlson.
Pauline was always having.
You had a bit to do with the fates, Ruth, didn't you?
Oh, one of them I did.
The fates, especially that first one, was a good money raiser.
So let's talk about how that was a good money raiser.
Well, Father Muldoon had a lot of his, when I say mates, not priests, but because he was a Campsie boy, and a lot of his friends from Campsie and their wives and families came up and helped, didn't they, Moss?
Yeah, well, not only helped, but they spent their money at the fate.
Spent their money as well.
But
really.
They did help as well.
But that must have been the early fates. I didn't have
it
much
was the
to
first
oh, that
fate.
Was the 63
the first
fate.
Fate.
So let's talk about how that fate looked. Where was it held?
In the church hall. Yeah. And they had a whole lot of stalls. One was a cake stall. I remember I had my... Any time I've ever had my purse stolen was at that cake stall. We put our purses behind, you know, we were standing behind. But, you know, there was a bit of a slit in the cloth that goes around. Apparently a couple of us had our purses. They must have put their hands in there when out of our bath. You know, we had those baskets in those, right? Must have grabbed their purses. But they had sweet stalls, didn't they? And plenty of stalls.
White elephant stalls.
And who made all the things?
Oh, Barbara came. She was terrific. Barbara had... you need someone with a bit of hide. She went from every... She and Kath Pine, I think Kath Pine trailed along behind her, went to every store in Liverpool asking for
every
donations.
Shop.
Every shop.
She was amazing.
Barbara was wonderful.
Asking for contributions to the... To the fate.
And then
she
rang
Shirley, though. She was good.
Austin. And then she rang Oliveri up. There was some big raffle going on. Asked him, would he donate a trip up to the Gold Coast? And that was raffled. I've forgotten
been
who won.
Before my time.
I don't think that would have been really.
I don't remember.
But she
that.
Rang Oliveri. She knew Oliveri, not well, but she knew him. And
Shirley Austin didn't move out there as early as the rest of us, though, did she?
No.
They came a bit later.
No, she had. But when we came there, she wasn't there. But her little boy had started school, and the teacher sent home a notice saying, look, he needed attention. He was dyslexic.
Mm.
And she didn't know. No one, I'd never heard of it at the time, you know. And so she said, we packed up. I don't know whether they rented the place or what they did. Packed up and went down to Sydney where they could be next to all the doctors they wanted to do. And they came back about three or four or five years later, didn't they?
Mm. Yeah.
And you know that, what was his name, Mark?
Yeah.
He went to school. They say these dyslexic children are often very bright kids, yes. You know. And he did wonderfully well, slowly, but did wonderfully well at school. And now I think last time we saw Sally in town, he was a barrister, wasn't he?
Yeah, he studied law.
Mm,
yeah.
I did Shirley's history.
And the other, what was the girl's name?
Donna.
Donna, she was quite bright at school too. What? He died, Sandy, years ago.
Yeah.
So just getting back to Silver Circle, can you describe what Silver's, who, and you would have all, I know we did, Silver Circle and how it worked and how long it was. And
I remember you won it once, Bernadette.
Oh, yes, I took my children to the show.
Each.
So 10 weeks, I think it was $100. Was
each person who was in the Silver Circle
$25
was given
£25.
A number.
Oh, bit of a mess.
And it was usually you'd get 100 people and they would be given a number, 1 to 100. And if that number was drawn, you'd have 10 weeks in each cycle of Silver Circle. And for the first 9 weeks, the prize money would be, say, £10. But on the last week of Silver Circle, the 10th week, that would be £100 result for whoever won it.
I don't know what it was, dollars.
And what would it cost? It would cost to participate each week.
Have I got my it was 20 cents a week.
2 and 6, wasn't it?
Two and six, was it?
Yeah.
I got the prize money right?
I don't think it was that much.
£100? What was it?
It might have been $100.
It might have been dollars by then. I don't think it was £100.
No. I remember the 20 cents. Collecting 20 cents.
So cents, it would have been dollars,
What was it, 66?
It was started as something else, that system did it.
Because everybody had so many people to go and collect from, didn't they?
Yes,
they had
right.
to get people into their circle. Because
Bessie
used to collect around our way. And she hated it.
It was her
penance, she said.
Used to send the kids, Peter used to do it, and he used to go to Shirley Maris, and she'd often give him 20 cents, I think. Oh, he thought that was great. So he soon got sick of that.
I remember because people would put you off every week and they wouldn't have the money. It was always a bit scary going to people's houses.
It's the trouble when you're collecting for anything, even at work when you're collecting for a going away present for someone, you know.
Mm.
There's always someone who hasn't got it. Oh, well, they might be genuine cases, of course.
So the cabarets started organising cabarets. Did you all attend the cabarets?
Yep.
Yes, I think we did, if we could.
Did Ruth attend?
Do you go to the cabaret sometimes?
The first one was good, wasn't it, Ross?
They were like balls, weren't they?
Yeah, but we did call it cabaret. Yes. That was the word we used.
Yes.
Yeah. What year would have been the first one? Would it be 65? I think it was about 65.
Probably would have been. I remember being at the first one.
Who organised those?
Oh, goodness. Kath Pine and Barbara were very...
Yeah, Barbara had a lot to do with it.
Very instrumental in organising things.
Mm.
And probably later people like Margaret Monley would have been involved.
Oh, I suppose she would have.
That's more her thing, isn't it?
Yes.
She was a wonderful caterer, Margaret, wasn't she?
And you didn't go, Norma, to the cabarets?
No, Alan wasn't a Catholic. And he never sort of wanted to go to any of the... He always thought he was going to get roped into having to go to church.
Did he?
So, and a lot of people thought I was a widow down there. Nobody thought I... And I've still got him, so...
I don't remember.
No, he went to a few of the sport things with the kids in the sports, But he wouldn't go to any of the other functions the dances or the fates or anything like that.
You look at Barbara Kane and Kath Dove and Bess Wade, their husbands, you know, they were great fellows, you know, and good husbands and everything, but they weren't social people. And they never wanted...
No.
Well, Alf wouldn't go to anything. And Bess, which is good, I'd be saying, oh, come on, come on. But she just accepted that he was like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Kath with Colin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who was the other one? Oh, Barbara. Well, Barbara, mm-hmm. he was already gone. But they were sort of company for each other when we went to these things.
Back then, Bobby Taylor was very quiet. Now he's more into things.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. How did you feel going by yourself? Did you go?
I didn't go to the cabarets because, you know, not dancing. Yes. But, I always went to the fates and all those sort of things. It didn't worry me. I still do what I want to do now, and Alan still stays at home. He's his own quiet person, you know.
I suppose that's the way to go instead of picking up a fuss, isn't it?
Yeah. So how was it when Miller Shops opened? And do you remember that opening?
Yeah, big turn, you know, when they opened. Because, I mean, it had to go into Liverpool to get anything, you know.
Yes. And, yes, it was good. When did they open? No, about 60. Oh. Were they open when you came?
Yeah, Ruth said they were open when you came.
Oh, it must have been 65
or early. Yeah, I'd say 65,
yes.
Because I think for the first good 12 months we were going to Liverpool to get our groceries.
Yes, but I think everyone, no one complained terribly, but could you imagine them today, Moss?
Mm.
It's a different
world.
Different world.
So I can remember, none of us had cars, and I'd be at Mass on a Sunday with all my little kids going to Mum's, and Father would get you to borrow his car to drive me to the station.
I can remember meeting you.
Yeah. And
it was a Sunday morning after Mass, and Father Muldoon said, Bernadette and her children need a lift to Liverpool station.
Michael was with
get
you
the
too,
car
wasn't
out.
He?
I got his I got his station wagon out.
Mm. Yeah, but, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
Michelle was a baby. You were nursing Michelle.
Yeah.
So Ruth, what are how do your views differ? I know you've said, well, I feel differently. In what ways do you what are you actually talking about there? What was your perception of?
Well, life was poor and tough and hard, wasn't it?
Was.
But I suppose you, Ruth, you said as a child you grew
if
up.
If I hadn't been a Catholic, I wouldn't have been too happy at all here. No, because too much hard living and poverty. And.
But as a child, you didn't grow up in.
I didn't have luxury.
Did
no, and it wasn't that. It wasn't that objected to. It was just.
Because the community was quite mixed.
Oh yeah, yeah. And there was a lot of. There were a lot of no-hopers, you know, and I didn't like that.
But you meet no-hopers.
We got a bad reputation. Yeah.
And how did you feel?
Some of us undeserved, but we had to live with it, yeah.
Mm. And how did that impact you all, that kind of negative press?
I thought it was
disgusting.
Mm.
Didn't worry me, because you chose your own friends. You didn't, even if your next-door neighbour, our next-door neighbour, we're never great friends with them, but... They were quite pleasant people, and if you needed them, they'd always be there. But you chose your own friends from different suburbs, and I think the church was a great...
well, that's what I mean for the church. I don't think I would have liked it.
It was a great get-together place.
No, they were a great group, the Catholic group.
It was
wonderful. Mm.
See, I found being a policeman's wife was a problem because all the no-happers would turn up on my doorstep and want... especially domestics and things like that. They expected me to help them because I was a policeman's wife.
Mm.
I do think, though, the fact that we were buying our homes and we were lucky enough to be able to raise that small amount of money, you took more of a... Even though we couldn't take too much pride, we didn't have that much money, but you took more of a pride in your house than people who are renting and
purchasing. Oh, absolutely.
True.
And the rentals, see, they don't have that system there. And if you go over to... East Baddow Bay, I think, where the housing commission...
West Baddow Bay,
is it? But, it's terrible. Well, according to Murray of the St Vincent Hall, it's terrible over there. Yeah.
So, Ruth, how was it hard for you? Like,
not having any money, I suppose, and you're a long way from everything. And
it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just difficult.
But everybody was in the same boat, and just how you...
Yeah.
Weren't we nice to you?
Oh, yeah, of course we're married.
But everybody's experience is different.
Oh,
you know,
it's
true.
Yeah, yes.
Mm. Now, before we break, I just want to talk about, so the TV and the radio licences, can you talk about that system, for those of you that know, we'll talk a bit more about, What did you have to do in those days for a TV and radio? Why did you have to need one?
Murray Landlord.
I didn't think we did.
I didn't know.
We weren't really aware that you'd needed one. We were given a radio for our
wedding
as a wedding gift, and the license didn't come with it, and we didn't apply for a license or pay for a license. And
I don't remember that.
We only knew that you needed a license when this fella knocked on the door and said, "I'm an inspector for radio licenses. Where's your radio license?"
And I said, "Oh, we haven't."
Marg innocently said, "Well, you haven't got one. How long have you had your radio?" "Oh, 5 years."
"No, 12 months, because we've been married just 12 months."
"Oh,
I said, 12 months."
"12 months."
"Oh," yeah, he said, "next thing is writing down in the book, and you had to go to court, didn't you?"
"Yeah. Now, I was told how to get out of it, but,
oh, yes, but, you
but I wouldn't stoop to that level."
"Oh, Bill Pearson said, just give them a couple of bottles of beer."
Yeah.
"What year was this?"
"That was about 54.
Anyway, I said, "No, I'm not going to see him anything."
54.
And so...
So this was in Green Valley?
This was in Green Valley.
What year?
No,
sorry.
This was Kansas.
Oh, sorry.
This was Kansas.
What year?
Oh, we're talking
about... Okay.
No, it still happened in Green Valley.
It did, yes.
We're about to hear.
Yes.
Just be patient and hear Norma's story, because I've heard Shirley Austin talk about it as well, and I'll tell you what she said.
This was Kansas.
Yeah, well, it must have been not long after we were there that... We started renting TV from radio. No, it wasn't
radio rentals,
but
yeah,
we were only renting our TV. And what we're paying that and you know, the everything, we never got round to getting a TV licence. Anyway, the chap came to the door and said, "Oh, you should have a licence." And I said, "Oh, you know, we just couldn't afford one, you know." And of course, all the little kids are sitting around my knee while I'm talking to this chap at the door. Anyway, he ended up saying, "Oh, you're going to have to go to court." But that was probably on the Monday. So on the Friday, I went and got a licence after Alan got paid. And by the time I went to court, the judge said to me, "Oh, well, seeing you've got the licence and your hardship and everything, you couldn't afford to get a licence, so you won't be able to afford a fine." So he sort of let me off with it. Yes, it was very good. But going into that courtroom, I was so mortified, having to stand outside and then they call you in. And I walked in and I'm standing there and I looked around and there's this man in the dock behind me, handcuffed to the dock.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh. And I was mortified. So that was enough.
Yeah. You were fined, weren't you?
But it was only a couple of years later they stopped.
Yes, they
you didn't
stopped.
Have to have them.
Yes. I never knew
so,
about it.
So what year was that?
Well, it would have been around 65. And, yeah, like I say, don't know exactly, but just, you know, a couple of years later they cut it out. You didn't have to have the licence.
And what did it cost for a licence?
Oh, it was £5 or I think something
fine,
like that.
£5.
But the licence itself was £5, I think.
And
that was a lot of money.
You had to you went to court, not your husband.
Yes, because he would have had to have a day off work. I mean, we were having problems, you know. He needed to go to work, so, yeah.
And was everybody having financial problems?
Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, no, none of the women worked, did they, in those days?
Yes.
I heard someone say yesterday, the ruination of this country has been women going to work.
I agree.
Truly, but I don't think they've got much choice in this day and age, have they?
Well, that's the way it's gone.
It depends how they want to live.
Gone,
yes.
So I remember Shirley Austin talking about the TV licence, and when they'd come to the front door, someone would jump the back fence and they'd all go down the fences and tell everybody that
were
there, and they'd all turn their TVs off.
Well, neighbour called out to me and told me the TV man was around. But when he came to the door and asked me, I just said, "Yes, we've got your TV." You know, he said, "Have you got a TV in the room?" I said, "Yes." I mean, I couldn't lie to him.
No.
And he said, "Have you got a licence?" And I said, "No." So.
Then we had to look out for the dog chap too when we got Meg. We didn't. Of course, And you couldn't hide me because we had a wire side gate, you know. And when he came in, she's barking behind the fence. He said, are you Murray's wife? I was, we knew you from somewhere. Or he said, I'll come back and see him later or something. And but get that dog registered. I made out it was Michael's dog. I said, look, it's my son's dog. I said, I'm not sure whether he's registered or not. I knew he wasn't. He didn't have the tag around him. He said, oh, I'll come back. He came back later, did he? Or anyhow, we got out of it.
I knew him well, this fella.
I was lucky.
So yeah. What happened with the telephone system? So you walked, there was only a few boxes around the place initially, was there?
We used to walk down to Saddler Shops to make a phone call.
Yes, that's where we used to too, yeah. Over the wheat park, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I borrowed money from my brother because I wouldn't stay here without a phone. We didn't have any furniture, but I wouldn't go without it.
The phones came in. We came in 63 and the phones came, because they had to put the lines down, the phones came in 64 the same month. So it's exactly 12 months. The phones
what about you, Norma? What did you do for a phone for all?
My good neighbour, Bessie, used to let me... Or she'd take messages if anybody, you know, had to ring. And
so she was your secretary.
Yes. And there was a phone box up the, like, you know, where they put a phone box in up the street. So, you know. But I remember when my father passed away, I had to use the phone box up the street for a lot of the organising his funeral and everything, you know. So,
and you'd always been looking for coins, I suppose, for the phone.
Yes, yeah.
Did you have the phone on where you lived before?
Mm.
Well, we were 10 years without the phone in Cairns. And people were saying, we had a very good neighbour opposite us that used to take messages, but I used to find it quite embarrassing. I thought my mother was a bit constant on the phone calls. And poor Mrs McMahon was always on the door to accept and giving me a message or telling me that someone or other was on the phone. So I was very determined when we got up here to Saddler, the first thing, as soon as they were available, we'd get a phone. Because I hated that business.
What about other things you had to wait for? Was all the street lights in? Or how did it look, the landscape?
They were in. Street lights were in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, pretty bare, perhaps.
Had to pay for our own something.
Driveways and that.
Driveways. Yes. Yes, we did have to
pay.
That's quite a few years later, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The roadways were already made. Yes. They were sealed roads.
It wasn't, yes. The roads were okay.
They were gutted.
Mm. Yes, we didn't have much.
Didn't have driveways and footpaths.
No, it didn't have driveways. Yeah.
I remember Alan got that wet winter that we were up here. He got bogged in our own driveway.
Yes.
He couldn't get out possible. To go to work.
Yes. We had sort of bricks laid down there for a while to try and make it easier.
You'd step off the cement and get peg clothes on the line and you'd just get stuck in the clay. You'd step out of your shoes. I had an old pair of golf shoes and they'd just get stuck in the way I'd go out of them.
Yes, the mud was dreadful.
I remember us being home the grass from Nana's. Plant grass, the buffalo grass, I think it was, from the golf course, you know, we'd get it from there. Because we didn't have any grass, did we?
We would do the same
thing. I think the Kaikoura took over for some reason.
Yeah. It did in the end.
Anyhow, by the time we finished, we were there 38 and a half years. And by the time we left, we were quite shipshape, or enough to suit us anyhow.
And how did your husband get out of the driveway, Bog?
Oh, the chap across the road had like a Jeep type of vehicle, and he pulled him out. Yeah.
And there was a bit of mud flying?
Oh, yes. And a bit of language flying. Too, so.
A bit.
Yes.
So did you all have washing machines?
No. Well, we did.
And for how long were you hand washing?
You weren't hand washing, were you?
With a copper roll.
Yeah, we had the electric copper or boiler, whatever that was.
Yes, we had a washing machine.
I would hand wash till about 1967.
Did you?
And when Michael's father died, we were sent his front loader washing machine. It used to break down all the time, but that was the first washing machine I ever had.
We had a Simpson when Peter was 12 months old, so that would have been 1955. Before we came up here, but gee, any time the washing machine broke down, you couldn't always afford to get the man in straight away. You'd have to do hand washing. I thought, how on earth did our grandmothers and great grandmothers put up with this?
Well, I didn't
do it for seven kids.
I didn't get a washing machine until I had Robert. He's my fifth child.
Yes.
And I used to bale the nappies into the
copper.
From the boiler into the tub, the cement tubs, didn't we? My mother had given me a ringer.
Oh, did you?
Oh, right.
And that was the boon. Yes. I could ring them out. You know,
I remember my grandmother to ring out sheets, she'd go, whoosh, whoosh. Yeah. I suppose years of practice. Yeah. Anything I rang out before was quite wet.
Yeah.
So, where were the laundries in the houses?
No, off the kitchen.
The kitchen.
Mm. Yeah, that kitchen, little into the back door.
One end of a hall.
Can you describe what the laundry tubs were like?
Cement tubs. We had a twin one. I'd put the ringer on the middle and you could, you know, turn the bottom plate, you know, and it'd rinse out the cold water or sudsy water.
How did you get your fresh meat and things?
I was fine because I had the shops.
Butchers,
we'd get them from Liverpool, I think. We would go on the bus to Liverpool and shop.
Yes, I suppose.
I can't remember where we went to for the butchers.
I can remember going back when I was younger, when we lived at Leichhardt. We were the first people in the street to get a refrigerator. Yeah. We had the ice box up until then.
Mm.
And there was a lady who lived a couple of doors up. And she'd come down every second day and get our ice cubes out of the refrigerator.
Isn't it funny?
Till the iceman comes and has the cooper going. Yeah.
Progress, eh?
Yeah.
In England, we thought in England we're 31 miles out. We thought we were very up to date when we got a fridge. Because before you had those Hessian bags, you know, that you used to have those there.
Yeah.
Well, this one was one. This fridge, you opened it up from the top. But you had to light it every night. It was a kerosene fridge. Yeah. You had to light it up every night. Well, that was the beginning of everything. It was lovely.
Apparently they were good fridges too.
Well, they were, you know. I can't remember how many complaints about them.
They lasted forever, those fridges.
Yes. But really, we had a meat house. You know, the meat was killed about every fortnight or so. And it was put in the meat house and hung. But I just can't understand. There's gauze all around this meat house and up high. I can't understand how you'd only kill a sheep once a fortnight and no refrigeration. How would you keep it? I don't ever remember eating meat that was off or anything.
Mom, I can remember my grandmother had one of those meat safes, you know, they hang from the...
Yeah, yes.
You'd put the meat in there.
Yeah, well, perhaps the hanging might have something to do
and
with it.
I can remember not long ago I saw one at the car boot sale thing, you know, and they wanted $150.
Yeah.
It was only a battered old tin thing, you know.
Like an antique shop or something.
Yes, and they went, if I had have taken that from her place when she moved.
Yes.
Okay, so you're meeting the nuns for the first time. Let's try and get a sense of the school and some of your first impressions of St. Therese, and there was a nun before Betty.
Yes. Well, Betty came with a couple of others, didn't she?
She wasn't the original
I don't think she was there originally.
Mother Stewart. Mother Goulding, Mother Stewart.
How about Mother? Was she there?
Yeah,
they came with Betty, they were there together.
Yeah, and Betty were together.
Yes, they were. The other ones
three.
Were earlier.
The day they come out, there was only three of them.
Who was the old one? The old one?
Stewart. Mother Stewart.
I'll just go around and find out how many children you've got and their names and sort of which of those were sort of looking to go to the school. So, Maury?
Well, to start with us, Peter was already at Patrician Brothers when our school opened at Green Valley. Carmel was at St Mary's. The next one was Michael. He was at Patrician Brothers. No, Marg's nodding.
No, he's still with the nuns. He wasn't up to the brothers.
Oh, well, he was still at St Mary's.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And Maureen had started at Mount Pritchard. But when the school opened, they were able to take her as they open two classes, I think. She was the fourth, and then Anne came after her, and then Paul came after.
Oh,
so, yeah. So we were, as far as our family was concerned, there was just the three children that would be serviced with this school at Sadler.
And Norma, what about
now? My eldest was going to the public school at Miller when we, when the school first opened. And then they said that she'd have to repeat third class. So when she repeated, was to repeat third class, the third class was opening down at the school, so I got her in down there then. So that's when she started. And then the others, I had five home from school at one stage there, five lit livs. And then each year they started another one at the school.
And what about you?
I was, when the nuns first came, when we first met them, it was after, I think we had an introduction to them at some turnout. And I was very pregnant with Daniel. It was in the December, and Daniel was born at the end of December, and the school was opening the next year. And I had Gregory start in second class and the twins start in kindergarten. And I'll never forget that day I met the nuns, because my darling husband came tearing down. "Ben, Dad, why don't you get home? The kids are all at home starving." And the nuns sort of looked and went, they'd never seen him before. And I went, "That's my husband, God love him."
So, Norma, you remember that?
I remember that. I remember him coming down and going off.
Remember
he'd,
that?
He'd done it on a few occasions, yes, different things.
Yeah. And what were you thinking about him?
I was thinking, I'm glad my husband's nice and quietly at home.
So. And what about you, Ruth? You had your daughters?
Four girls all went to St. Therese. Yeah. Jane had the first year at Miller School. And then she started first class at St. Therese. And the others all followed in age, you know.
Was it exciting? Like, was it because the nuns remember a lot of laughter at the gate. They always talked about
We were delighted. I was delighted when they had... I rang Father Muldoon when we first moved here and I said, "What sort of Catholic school have we got?" And he said, "We haven't." So when that school started, it was... It's great delight, it was. Yeah. But the nuns were very demanding, weren't they?
Mm.
Typical nuns, they expect everything done.
And I think it was a bit of a shock to them to come out here because, I mean, they come from Rose Bay.
They loved it here.
I know that. I know they loved it.
Oh, right.
But everything didn't come quite as easy.
No, but you gave them a choice of where they wanted to live.
Yeah, that was after, in hindsight.
But they got a bit of a shock when they, like, first come out here and they'd say, "Oh, we'll organise this," and we'd say, "Oh, it's a bit expensive, you know." And things that they'd organise back there came easy to them. They loved it. I know that they loved it here.
Because remember, they were enclosed at that time.
They were.
Yes.
Oh.
One of my special memories of kindergarten was Therese and David. They'd come home from school. Mother Stewart was teaching them. And they'd come home and Therese would call me Mother. And they'd use all these lovely... It was beautiful. The way they were spoken to and the way they learnt from that.
It was lovely. I remember Sister McMahon, or Mother McMahon, or Betty McMahon, say, "We love to see the cupboard empty, because it's an opportunity to get up to the shop." So they'd never been to the shop. So it was such a new world to them.
That's a great piece.
That's really, it's the best thing that ever happened to the nuns and coming out of it. And they came out with a bang, didn't they?
What did you think of their outfits? Did you think, oh, God?
Well, that first outfit.
Little bonnets and...
I meant when they couldn't dress.
Some of them had a great... Sister
Ursula. I didn't like it.
I used to have to make Sister...
Yeah.
Sister Ursula loved clothes, didn't she?
Yes.
Fleur used to come round for me to make her clothes for her.
Yeah.
What didn't you like, Ruth?
I didn't like them giving up their... Oh, well, they had to update their habit, but I still like them to look like nuns and not like...
But I liked it when they did update just the early stage just the shorter dress and just the veil. That was lovely. I liked that. But I didn't like it when they first went out of the house.
Sister Hayes was very modern. Yes. She was the jeans and the... But she looked good. She went to White Watchers... Not White Watchers. Jenny Craig. And looked lovely.
Well, I remember Betty McMahon telling me the first time they showed their hair at school, my Gregory went up to her and he said, "Sister, you didn't get dressed properly this morning, all your hair's sticking out."
You may be interested that, that Father Muldoon, when he arrived at, as the parish priest, he decided at that stage that he would organise the St Vincent de Paul. He could see a great need in the valley for the St Vincent de Paul, and so he, it was in March that he arrived in October. By the March, he'd chosen six fellows to go into Liverpool and be trained by the Liverpool St Vincent de Paul, and we used to go to the meetings and go out on calls with the Liverpool people. At that stage, they were visiting not only Liverpool but Green Valley as well. And in the July, after being trained, we then started the St Vincent de Paul in Green Valley.
Mm. Who were the originals, Murray?
The originals.
The six, you said.
Mm.
Ray Dolly, you?
No, Ray wasn't Ray. Kevin Kalorn.
Oh, Kevin.
Vincent.
Campbell. What was Campbell's first name?
Alex Campbell.
Alex Campbell.
Vince?
No. Carol.
Oh, Brian Carroll. And not Brian, Barry.
Barry Carroll.
They didn't last long.
Bert Kilroy?
No.
No, Bert was later
no.
on.
No. I think I'm...
Purcell?
No. No.
People you've mentioned that I didn't know. Yeah.
Don't, you don't know them?
No.
Don't you know Barry? Oh, you know Barry Carroll, don't you? Warren's.
Oh, yeah.
Gee, I can't remember the other two. There was myself, and there was another two. I can't remember.
And what'd you do?
As far as St Vincent de Paul's concerned?
What were you required to do in the valley?
Father would receive calls at the presbytery for assistance, for usually food, because people were in a situation where they had so many bills that they paid their bills and they had no money left for food. So we'd go and visit them and supply them with food. In those days, we didn't take a hamper. We used to give them a voucher. And that voucher was on Safeways at that time. Miller, and the figure that I can think of was, I think, £2 we used to give them, and that would do them, that would be enough help for them to get out of the hole that they were in. Now and again, we would give them a voucher to go to the butcher, and John Bowers was the butcher. And he was terrific. He used to look after them so well with such a little amount of money.
So with the sense of, there was a big sense of community. And did you feel that, Ruth? Did you feel the community? Like the
with the Catholic community, yeah.
And Norma?
Yes.
Did you feel it outside of the Catholic community? Or was it a bit more desperate, really?
Oh, no, we made a lot of friends there and that weren't Catholic, you know, that were, and, we got on well with everybody sort of thing.
You stuck with the Catholic community, you
Catholics? Well, they were nicer people.
Yeah.
Well, we had Minnie next door and people like that around, you know, Peg Hillier and all of those.
Your neighbours?
Yeah, they were good friends and we'd all help each other. Well, Minnie was like your other grandmother.
I think because your children were going to school with these other children, you had a closer relationship.
Yeah, true.
With the parents of the children.
Yeah, you did.
Well, you'd meet at sporting
yes, exactly.
functions and social functions.
Exactly.
And
Well, our neighbours across the street, well, one lady had 10 children, the other had 4 and 5. And, yeah, my kiddies all got on well with them, you know.
Mm.
And school holidays, it was nothing to have 15 kids in the backyard playing because I didn't like mine going out of the yard, so everyone had come to our
place. Yes, playing in the backyard was all very well. And but when they set up a cricket pitch in the backyard and your window
Well, my father and husband built the girls a cubby house and everybody had come to play in the cubby house. It had a little veranda on it and everything, you know. It was,
I used to say to Peter was about 11 or 12 and he and his friend, go down to Wheat Park and play cricket, you know. Because the louvers on the garage and everything went in.
Really?
And, Peter's too far to run for the ball down
there. I was just thinking too, Therese, in the early days, before I had Paul over from yesterday, I used to do Father Muldoon's typing, his secretary. I'd go after Mass, didn't I, and I'd type in the presbytery for him. And then when the nuns came, before they employed Shirley Butts, I used to do all their work at home. They lent me a typewriter. And that gave me a chance to really get to know them on a more personal level too.
Yeah.
And did the trusting level. Did they, because they were enclosed, you would have to pick the work up and drop it back, or is it when they weren't enclosed? Like, they were in enclosed order, they couldn't leave.
Yeah.
Well, they were unenclosed pretty soon after it was very close.
It was a couple of years, because it was 72 or something, or 70.
Well, it was a couple of years, because they interviewed them all.
Okay.
And then go through
Well, there's times I would go down there. I even typed a book up that they wanted published. I don't know who wrote the book now, but I remember doing that. But they did give me a typewriter to use, and I probably did go down and get it from them at those early times. Mm. Yeah.
Yes,
and then Fleur got very involved with Shirley Austin and I with the walkathon that time.
Yeah.
So and Paul Monley.
The walkathon, whose idea was that?
I think Fleur thought that one up, to be honest. I really think it was Shirley or Fleur. Maybe it was Shirley.
I think Shirley was.
Yeah, she might have. But I know Fleur was very involved, so maybe she'd picked up the idea.
Yes.
And it was Shirley and Fleur and Paul Monley and I that sort of were put to work on it.
And what did that involve?
It was a fair bit. Well, it was a new thing. It was a really new thing, the walkathon. It was one of the first walkathons that was ever. There was a fair bit of work involved. You had to get permission to do things. I can't remember all we did now because it's so long ago.
We walked from.
What year was that?
It was 1969. I remember the walkathon happened about the same time the man walked on the moon. That's my connection with it.
Yeah.
And do you know how much money was raised from the walkathon at all?
I've got a funny feeling it was something like £2,000. Mm. So it makes
Have been dollars in 69.
Dollars, sorry. Yeah. There were thousands mentioned. I can't quite think of the exact amount now.
No, we didn't go on. Oh, that's when I was working on Sundays. We didn't
did
go on.
Did you go
right?
No, but someone did.
I did.
Norman did.
And what do you remember about the walkathon? Because I do have a photograph of Father Muldoon in the walkathon.
Mm.
I remember it was a long way.
It was.
And the kids all did do it. My kids wanted to do it, and I said, no, you should conk out. And, you know, so I did it for them. So anyway, Sister McMahon, her cousin was the Coots. Jimmy Coots, John Coots.
Oh.
Wasn't it John Coots, a footballer?
Ron
Coots, yeah.
I thought it was Murray's, what he said.
Mr. McMahon.
Yeah, he was
the one, he was
a footballer.
Alan McMahon.
That's right.
Yeah,
McMahon.
But I think a cousin was Coots. And he was there at the end shaking all our hands.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. He did it first, but he got there pretty quick because he was athletic.
He died years ago, didn't he? I think it was a heart attack or something.
So just thinking about organising that, like, and participating and thinking of all the children you had, it was quite a commitment from the community to involve yourselves, really, wasn't it? What was the motivation?
Raising money.
Money.
Because you raised a lot of money. The money would have basically built everything.
It's amazing, really, because really there wasn't a great... No one had a great input to put in, which was pretty marvellous.
A lot of people did little bits. Gambling nights too. Remember the gambling night?
Yeah.
But then the rough crowd got in on that. Mm. Somebody got the word that they were having, and yes, they used to come.
That was the last time we had.
Yes, that. Yeah, and was poor that? Old Father Muldoon was left with a big deficit, you know. Mm. So.
And are you talking about Hoy that they had down at the Catholic Church?
No,
we're
talking about
the gambling nights.
Oh, well, this Hoy was going fine, and then they found out, or they were approached by someone who informed them they had no right to be having it, because you had to have a special licence.
Yeah, you had to have a licence,
And which they didn't have.
So can you tell me about the gambling nights? What did that involve?
I can't remember. What was the gambling
They used to have the
Esmeralda,
the racing
wheel. That was racing game.
And the... the dice, you know, the
crown,
clubs and
crown
and anchor dice, yeah.
They just had gambling games.
Well,
it was purely a money-making.
Mainly the men went to those or what?
Oh, the ladies had to go along for the supper, right?
They went as
well. Work.
Yes. So you were there doing the
supper? Yes, I'd done a couple of those, yeah.
So just talk to me about, and you were there gambling, Morris?
Yes.
I would have been. He was probably running
the games.
Yeah.
I can't remember them in great detail.
Can you, Norma? Can you remember how?
Oh, I can remember having on the racing game, putting a shilling on and getting two or three shillings back, and it was quite good, you know. Remember one night I went home with a couple of dollars in my pocket and thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Where was that held?
In the hall.
Mm.
And how many people would attend that?
Oh, they'd get a fair few to it, wouldn't they?
Yeah. What, 60, 80?
Yeah.
Would they? Oh.
Yeah.
And the ladies would put on a supper for them.
Yeah. Not everyone was gambling. It was a gambling night, but not everyone was gambling.
No, we'll get together and...
Was it a weekend night, a Friday or a Saturday night?
I think it'd be a Friday night, because nothing interfered with his housing
on
Saturday night.
Did you ever go to Housie, Ruth?
No.
I hate it.
Me too.
Yeah, I used to go with my dog at the finish, because they had problems with young fellas roaming around on a Saturday night looking for trouble, so I used to go there with Meg, who was an Alsatian dog, and she wouldn't hurt a flea, really.
You were perhaps the first security guard ever in
Australia. Is that funny? She always knew what night she was today. It was certainly second Saturday.
But you started
waiting at the door, tail wagging, dogs have a wonderful sense of things. Mm.
I was a seller there for a good few years. Selling
that. Was that as a volunteer?
Yes.
You were very good,
Norma. Yes, Norma was.
I went once on a winter night and they had all the windows shut and everyone opposite me was smoking.
The stairs
were just streaming down your chin.
I couldn't handle the cigarette smoke. No, I couldn't do it.
So what would you do is you'd be selling tickets?
Yes. They used to sell them in between each game. But then they got that they could buy the book at the beginning, and that made it a lot easier. But we just had to run up and down the line selling between each game, And then you'd take your tray out, and there'd be people sitting in the back room counting out all the coins, the small coins and that,
So who would work with you?
Oh, there'd be the youth of the parish used to do a lot of the selling back then.
The teenagers.
Well, and
Barbara Cain's crowd.
Yes.
I know we did the cleaning, but I didn't do any selling. Mm. We used to clean.
Yes,
the next
I remember
day.
Cleaning the.
Yes. Oh, that was nice.
And a lot of hours
ashtrays.
On the cleaning.
Mm.
Those big buckets, ice cream buckets of.
Yeah. I remember they used to, after the housing, they'd sweep it. They'd break all the tables down and put them up on the wall and sweep it all and get all the chairs out ready for mass the next morning.
That's right, it was
That was before we got the church.
Had to clean the church once a week, anyhow.
Oh, yes.
Not that
everyone
was
a rustle,
not everyone was on every week. But.
Mm.
And who supplied the flowers, do you know?
Margaret Taylor used to organise the flowers, didn't she? I seem to recall Margaret Taylor looking after them.
Yes.
We always had flowers. Remember the Purcells bought those artificial ones.
Father didn't...
We used those for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm.
She was a bit Joan was a bit upset. It was the anniversary of the little one's death.
Yeah.
And whether she caught him in a bad mood or something.
It was Christine, wasn't it?
Yes. She's been gone a while now, hasn't she?
Mm. I'm just trying to think, when did we first have start the parish council? Mm. What year would that have been?
I don't know. It was
we?
Well into the...
I went for a few years of different points.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Mm. You and I were on that one, weren't we, together?
Oh, we were on one. And
you and I were on one together.
Quickly got the sack, didn't we?
Who gave you the sack?
Father.
Were you upset?
Oh, look.
Father had to run everything himself.
Yes.
He wasn't working. He more or less took the attitude, well, the buck stops here. Yeah. And I'm going to make the decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
So he only had a parish council.
Because he had to.
Just because he had to.
That's right.
They told him he had to have a parish council.
Yeah. And we had a mob with us that burned us. Excellent. She's a great secretary. But the rest of the mob, the men were useless.
We had Vincey Silk.
They just wanted to be on there because they were a council, you know. Right, and they were dead loss.
And what were you on the council?
I was dead lost too.
You represented the women for the faith committee or something, didn't you?
Yeah,
something
did some
like
fights,
that, wasn't it? Yeah.
But the men was just a bit
socially
a bit of a prestige thing for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The fates were wonderful though. They always enjoyed the fates.
Yeah. They were good.
Yeah.
I remember I was on the White Elephant store, and things would be going for 10 cents, and people would come up and say, "I'll give you 5 cents."
Great women are working on fates.
You had to make the hard decisions.
Yes, yeah. Oh well, you'd sell it just to get rid of it, but you'd think, "Oh, come on!"
How desperate.
Yeah.
Margaret Patrick was quite active on those cake store for a few years. I remember once I took down the cake one with. Poor Margaret was very upset. I gave her the cake to put behind the stall, and apparently while they weren't looking, a dog got in there and ate the cake.
How funny. I can remember we'd always try and be the first one there to get Margaret Carr's sponges.
Oh, look, I can't cook a sponge up here. I'm blaming the oven.
No,
it's
probably
to cook. A terrible stove. It comes out just like a pancake, so I'm not wasting 4 eggs on them any longer.
I still remember the day, I know it was Vincey Silk with me, it must have been just before the opening of the church, we were getting everything ready, and Vince and I were cleaning off all the graffiti on the hall, and Monsignor Leonard was related to Betty McMahon, I sort of remember Monsignor.
They were brought up down at Wollongong together, the Leonards and McMahons lived in the same street.
Because I remember, because he was the big CYO chaplain of the CYO. And I couldn't believe what he did. He walked up and he went, "Bernadette Toohey, Vincey Silk, what you two should be doing, clean swear words." So funny. He remembered us from CYO days.
What the Lennons lived in that street where McMahon's were, Coronel Street.
Oh, is that the street they were in?
You know, they were.
I know, yeah.
We used to go for holidays there sometimes,
That's right.
It was left to the nuns, I think, until they...
Mm.
I think they finally sold it, didn't they? Or what did they do?
I think it's been sold. Actually, I think the Catholic healthcare, what they call... Not Catholic healthcare, what they used to call Centre Care. Catholic Care.
Right,
I think they took it on.
Oh,
did
they? Father McMahon did have sort of a little self-contained flat
on
the back.
It was great for him to go down there. Whenever he needed to have a break, he'd go down.
Yeah.